It is nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT, broadcasting on 100.1 FM. It is your public radio station here in beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where we have fair skies, a few clouds, 29 degrees, light westerly winds, 10 miles of visibility. It's a great day to fly if that is what you're doing today. And look for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the day with a high near 36, west winds to 10. A slight chance of snow late tonight, followed by a chance of rain. Otherwise, mostly cloudy skies tonight with a low around 28 and west winds to 10. And for tomorrow, here comes the weather. Rain could be heavy at times, and as well as easterly winds up to 30 miles per hour or so tomorrow. That rain's expected to continue through the rest of the week. Coming up on the Midday Report, an undisclosed number of people are missing after a massive landslide in Wrangell. A lawsuit filed against the Mat-Su Borough School District says they violated students' constitutional rights by removing books from school library shelves. Those stories and more after headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The Biden administration says it's hopeful some hostages held by Hamas could soon be freed. The Israelis are considering a pause in fighting for several days to facilitate the release of some hostages. This time period could also smooth the way for more aid getting into Gaza. Here's NPR's Michelle Kellerman.
State Department spokesman Matthew Miller says the U.S. never thought that aid should be contingent on a hostage deal, but says the release of hostages will unlock more humanitarian assistance flowing into Gaza. The U.S. has been working on that for weeks now, encouraging Israel to allow fuel into Gaza and speed up the inspections of other aid. Miller says the U.S. is also encouraging Israel not to ramp up its offensive in the south until they have taken steps to account for the humanitarian needs there. Israeli authorities had encouraged Palestinians to move south to areas they said would be safer. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
NPR's Daniel Estrin's been tracking developments from the West Bank.
As part of that deal, both sides have agreed to approximately 4 days in pause in fighting. That will allow for Hamas to actually go and search for all of the hostages. Hamas has some of the hostages, but other militant factions and even some private Palestinian citizens are believed to be holding some of the hostages. And so those approximately four days in pause in fighting will allow them to try to get a hold of where are the rest of the hostages.
NPR's Daniel Estrin. Travel's picking up ahead of Thanksgiving at airports. The TSA is expecting to screen a record 30 million people in the 12-day period that started last Friday and culminates Sunday. NPR's Joel Rose reports higher travel's amplifying concerns about air safety.
The Federal Aviation Administration commissioned a safety review by outside experts after a series of close calls on runways across the country this year. That group issued a 52-page report last week, and the group had major concerns about the shortage of air traffic controllers that has left many key air traffic facilities short-staffed. That's forcing controllers to work overtime and grueling schedules. The group also raised concerns about outdated equipment and facilities. The report says, quote, urgent action is needed to maintain safety.
There's been a major plea deal between the world's largest cryptocurrency exchange and the U.S. government, NPR's David Gura reports.
After a years-long investigation, the U.S. government charged Binance with violating sanctions laws and running an unlicensed money transmitting business. Attorney General Merrick Garland says the company will pay one of the largest corporate penalties in U.S. history. The Treasury Department and the Commodity Futures Trading Commission are also parties to the deal. A separate suit from the SEC has not been resolved. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen says Binance allowed terrorists and cyber criminals to use its site. Binance's founder and CEO Changpeng Zhao, who's better known by his initials CZ, pleaded guilty to a separate charge.
This is NPR.
NPR News is brought to you in part by Providence Kodiak Island Counseling Center. For an appointment or more information, 481-2400.
For KMXT, I'm Terry Haynes. An undisclosed number of people are missing after what was described as a massive landslide destroyed at least two houses and covered the highway about 11 miles outside of Wrangell late Monday night. According to local emergency alerts and social media posts from residents, the slide occurred about 11 miles out the Zemovia Highway at about 9 p.m. on Monday. As of Tuesday morning, many details remain unknown. Neither officials from the city or borough had publicly announced evacuation plans for any areas near the landslide. Wrangell Interim Borough Manager Mason Valarma declined to publicly comment overnight about individuals who may be missing or injured. Multiple families in the area reported to personal social media pages of being evacuated by boat overnight. Officials say that more houses may have been affected in addition to the two houses destroyed, but because of unstable ground in the slide area, officials say it's not yet possible to assess the full extent of damage. Local officials say initial measurements show the slide is about 200 feet long and stretches from the uplands to the coast. When the first local responders arrived at the scene, they reported trees were still cracking and falling in the area. While some search and rescue efforts continued throughout the night, most volunteers were called back from the landslide due to ongoing concerns about the stability of the site. Before resuming a full-scale search and rescue effort, the crews are awaiting an assessment of the area by a state geologist who is anticipated to arrive sometime today, weather permitting. On Monday night, Wrangell residents living as far as 5 miles away reported via social media pages of hearing the landslide. A spokesperson for the U.S. Coast Guard confirmed early Tuesday morning that it is, quote, actively engaged in assisting Wrangell with landslide response, including diverting the 150-foot cutter Bailey Barco to the community, which will help with the site assessment from the water. The spokesperson said state troopers have also requested the assistance of a Coast Guard helicopter to help with the aerial search and site assessment. The helicopter was anticipated to arrive in the community sometime after first light today. Local businesses and organizations, including Harbor Light Church and the Stikine Inn, offered food and lodging to people displaced by the slide or worried about the stability of other hillsides in the area. The slide also knocked out power to an unknown number of homes out the road. As of early Tuesday morning, Light and Power did not have an estimate for when power would be restored to the homes past 9 miles. The National Weather Service reports that the Wrangell area received just over 3 inches of rain in a 24-hour period between early Monday morning and early Tuesday morning. That's more than 7 times the daily normal for the region at this time of year, or around a quarter of the rain that typically falls during the entire month of November. Kodiak residents reported seeing a sunken vessel in Near Island Channel yesterday. It turned out to be a boat that sank last week and was being salvaged at the gravel boat launch ramp. The Ohana, a landing craft style boat, apparently sank about a week ago in St. Herman's Harbor. According to a phone call from a representative for the city's harbor department, the spokesperson did not say whether the boat had caused any damage to the harbor when it sank. The cause for the Ohana's sinking is still unknown. The boat was towed from its spot in the harbor to the gravel launch boat ramp nearby, and salvage efforts could be seen from downtown Kodiak. A lawsuit filed Friday in federal court accuses the Matanuska-Susitna Borough School District of violating 6 students' constitutional rights by removing 56 books from school library shelves last spring. The district removed the books in April at the direction of the Mat-Su School Board, which had received some complaints. Then, this fall, the board appointed a Library Citizens Advisory Committee to review the books. The committee has reviewed 12 books so far, 8 of which they recommended should only be kept in high school libraries, but removed from the middle and elementary schools. The plaintiffs in the lawsuit filed Friday are represented by the ACLU of Alaska and the Northern Justice Project. Scott Adams and his wife Dawn joined the lawsuit on behalf of their daughter, who is in middle school.
I do understand where some people might not think it's appropriate for their child to read that book and other books, but that's their right. You know, if your kid comes home with that book and you don't think it's appropriate, take it back to the library. You know, don't make that decision for me. Let me make that decision.
The plaintiffs issued a press release on Friday that noted Many of the protagonists in the challenged books are people of color or LGBTQ plus characters. Savannah Fletcher is a lawyer for the Northern Justice Project.
This is a fundamental constitutional right, that freedom to explore ideas, and it's a dangerous precedent we set when just one person complaining about a book has the power to remove access to it to every single family, every single student. And that's the big motivating push behind this lawsuit, is to protect our constitutional rights.
Mat-Su School District spokesperson Jillian Morrissey said on Monday the district has not been served with the lawsuit and otherwise declined to comment. Fletcher says the plaintiffs will ask the court for a preliminary injunction to get the books back on shelves as soon as possible, and that the district has until the start of 2024 to respond. 78 Alaskan Native tribes have signed on to letters urging the Bureau of Land Management to maintain a long-standing protection on millions of acres of land throughout the state. As KYUK's Evan Erickson reports, tribes say the potential opening of the lands to development poses a direct threat to indigenous ways of life.
In a series of moves by the federal government since 2019, the amount of lands across the state from which Alaska Native Vietnam War veterans can select allotments has grown to roughly 29.5 million acres. Under the allotment program, vets or their descendants can claim 160-acre parcels, regardless of where they live. 28 million of those acres could soon be open to potential mineral exploration and development, depending on the results of an environmental impact statement set to be released by the Bureau of Land Management as early as mid-December. That's a cause for concern for dozens of tribes in the state. 78 tribes have signed letters urging the BLM to maintain long-standing protections for the lands. Frank Kachetag is tribal president of the village of Unalakleet and vice chair of the Bering Sea Interior Tribal Commission, representing 38 of the tribes calling for protection.
It was right in our backyards, and the fear is the headwaters where our salmon spawn. We are going through salmon crashes throughout the state of Alaska.
The land that Kachetag refers to as his backyard is called the Bering Sea Western Interior Planning Area. It contains the lion's share of the land in question, more than 13 million acres. Much of it lies along the Yukon and Kuskokwim rivers, with large portions also overlapping the southern range of the declining Western Arctic caribou herd.
It makes no sense to impose any kind of mining until our sustainable resource has rebounded.
The 28 million acres that could be open to development are classified as D1 lands. They are unreserved public lands set aside under the authority of the Interior Secretary following passage of the 1971 Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. They have been off limits to development ever since. The tribe's letters to Interior Secretary Deb Haaland say opening millions of acres of D1 lands poses a serious threat to indigenous ways of life. They also say the already apparent effects of climate change warrant continued protection. Kachetag says it's serious.
And I've said it to the Bureau of Land Management. This is the beginning of genocide.
Supporters of opening the 28 million acres in question, including Alaska Senators Lisa Murkowski and Dan Sullivan, say the ANCSA-era land withdrawals are outdated and unnecessary. Both have called for opening D1 lands. Former President Donald Trump's Interior Secretary signed orders to open the lands in the final days of his presidency, but that was quickly reversed by the incoming Biden administration, citing legal deficiencies and a need to consult with Alaska Native tribes and corporations. Sullivan has characterized the moratorium, now in the environmental review stage, as an injustice to Alaska Native veterans, though applications for allotments on the lands in question are still being accepted. Kachetag says that he supports the effort to honor promises to veterans, but that he wants more tribes to sign on to the effort to keep D1 protections in place.
And I've said to Sullivan and Murkowski, I could eat a lot of salmon, but I sure can't swallow a chunk of gold. Once the land is scarred, we are forever impacted.
For now, veterans and their heirs who have missed out on the opportunity to claim their rightful allotments will have first pick of the D1 lands. But depending on the results of the BLM draft environmental impact statement expected as early as mid-December, they may not end up the only stakeholders of this vast swath of wilderness. In Bethel, I'm Evan Erickson.
An emergency subsistence hunt held in Cake at the start of the COVID pandemic has been found to be lawful over the objections of the state. The ruling by the United States District Court of Alaska earlier this month further strengthens the federal government's position in subsistence management in Alaska. KCAW's Robert Woolsey has this report.
The hunt was authorized by the Federal Subsistence Board and managed by the Forest Service, Petersburg Ranger District, after a request from the tribal government of Cake. The OVK, or Organized Village of Cake, petitioned the Federal Subsistence Board in 2020, shortly after nationwide lockdowns and supply chain disruptions threatened the food supply to the 500 residents of the community located on Kuprinoff Island, about 50 miles east of Sitka. Hunters designated by OVK were allowed to take 2 bull moose and 5 male Sitka black-tailed deer per month outside of the state-regulated seasons for these animals. Meat from the harvest was distributed to 135 households in Cake. The hunt prompted a swift legal response from the state, essentially a new challenge to a 3-decade-old conflict in Alaska. The discrepancy between the 1980 Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act, or ANILCA, which, in the simplest terms, grants a rural subsistence priority, and the Alaska Constitution, which does not. The November 3rd ruling by U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason reaffirmed that, when push comes to shove, federal laws supersede state laws in matters of subsistence. In its initial lawsuit against the Cake Hunt, the state argued that nowhere in ANILCA is there language authorizing emergency subsistence hunts, and that the Federal Subsistence Board lacked the authority to create them. The state took the issue as far as the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals this past March, and even claimed victory when the justices rejected the United States' claim that the question was moot and remanded the matter to the Alaska District Court for review. U.S. District Court Judge Sharon Gleason, however, concluded that ANILCA gave the U.S. Secretary of Interior broad discretionary power to authorize emergency hunts, even though they're not strictly spelled out. She wrote, "The court finds that the Secretary's regulation, which authorizes the Federal Subsistence Board to open public lands for the taking of fish and wildlife for public safety reasons, is valid as applied to the emergency hunt that the board authorized for Cake." And Judge Gleason lets the state know they should have seen it coming. Citing one of the first major subsistence cases following ANILCA, Katie John, Gleason wrote, "Congress was clear in ANILCA's text that enforcement of the subsistence priority would entail altering the traditional balance of power between the state of Alaska and the federal government." Reporting in Sitka, I'm Robert Woolsey.
Murkowski says a group of women recently came to her office in the Heart Center.
As the humanitarian crisis in Gaza has grown, more Americans have called on their political leaders to press Israel to stop its assault. Women's groups calling for ceasefire focused their advocacy last week on female senators, including U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski. However, Murkowski says she isn't budging from her support of Israel. Alaska Public Media Washington correspondent Liz Ruskin reports.
Murkowski says a group of women recently came to her office in the Hart Senate office building.
They said that it was mothers from Palestine who were sharing their stories.
Murkowski opens a white binder they left behind and turns page after page of photos of Palestinian children.
Beautiful, beautiful children who have lost their lives. And you cannot look, I mean, you cannot look at faces like this and not feel extraordinary grief and a sense of loss. We would be inhuman if we were to think otherwise.
Murkowski closes the binder and sets it back on the coffee table in her office. Like most senators and like the Israeli government, she says Israel has a right to defend itself. On October 7, Hamas militants killed roughly 1,200 Israelis and took hostages with them back to Gaza. Israel has responded with air and ground assaults that have killed an estimated 13,000 Gazans. Murkowski says the actions aren't morally equivalent because Hamas purposely targeted civilians.
I have been asked by some about my support for a ceasefire. And the picture that I keep on my desk is a picture of Abigail, who is 3 years old. And Abigail is a hostage.
Murkowski holds an unframed photo of a toddler with curly hair, Abigail Moore Idan, an American and Israeli citizen. Terrorists killed her parents October 7 and took her away. Murkowski met with one of Abigail's aunts a few weeks ago. She says she keeps the girl's photo on her desk to remind her that Hamas and others in Gaza still hold some 240 hostages. Murkowski says the high death toll and horrible scenes from Gaza are consequences of Hamas brutality. She accepts what Israel has asserted for weeks, that Hamas built tunnels and command posts under hospitals.
These facilities have been built over months, possibly years, knowing full well that there may come a time when they needed those innocent people, those ill people, those brand new newborns in an incubator, that they would need them as a human shield.
Israel in recent days has focused its operations on Al-Shifa Hospital, saying it houses a Hamas command post, a claim Hamas and hospital staff deny. Hamas says Israel is committing war crimes by attacking hospitals and other civilian infrastructure. While she's not joining calls for a ceasefire, Murkowski says she does want to see more humanitarian aid delivered to Gaza, and she wants safe evacuation routes for civilians. Reporting from the U.S. Capitol, I'm Liz Ruskin.
A winter storm hit much of southeast Alaska on Monday, bringing heavy snow to Hoona, Gustavus, and Haines, and blizzard conditions to Juneau that prompted early closures. And the intense wind and snow also caused a 40-minute power outage in downtown Juneau Monday morning. Snowfall totals varied throughout the southeast. In Juneau, there were accumulations between 4 and 6 inches by Monday afternoon. Haines and Skagway saw up to 8 inches. And Hoona reported 21 inches of snow. Last night's snowfall could push those totals up by several inches.
Travel during the Thanksgiving holiday could set a new record. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute. Millions are expected at airports and tens of millions on the roads. The TSA is forecasting nearly 3 million air passengers on Sunday alone. That would set a new record. AAA says more than 55 million will travel at least 50 miles by car. X, formerly Twitter, is suing Media Matters for America, which reported that advertising on the platform was showing up next to pro-Nazi and white nationalist posts. X says the report picked scenarios that were, quote, manufactured, inorganic, and extraordinarily rare. Media Matters stands by its report. The European Patent Office has ruled that an mRNA patent held by Moderna is invalid. BioNTech and Pfizer had challenged it. I'm Novosafo with the Marketplace Minute.
Kodiak College Student Government is hosting a pasta and sauce drive with the help of many Kodiak retailers. Between November 11th and November 26th, you can enter your name in for an epic prize by dropping off a donation of a box of pasta and pasta sauce to one of these locations: Highmark Marine, Kodiak Island Brewery, Bases Loaded, Bella Bronze, Kodiak Power Sports, Taze Wellness, and Grand Slam Toys and Books. Though not a drop-off location, special thanks to the Islander Bookshop.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
Good afternoon and welcome to your Island Messenger for Tuesday. It is the 21st day of November, the year 2023. The sun rose today at 9:08 this morning. It will set again at 4:42 this afternoon, giving us 7 hours and 34 minutes of daylight. A loss of 3 minutes and 45 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high temperature for this date was 50 degrees, set in 1935, and our record low was 4, set in 1922. Currently, a relatively warm 33 degrees. Under fair skies, it's a beautiful day. West winds at a mere 3 miles per hour at the airport, where they have 10 miles of visibility. The Weather Service is calling for mostly sunny skies for the rest of the afternoon with a high near 36, west winds to 10. and a chance of snow late tonight, followed by a chance of rain, partly cloudy overnight with a low of 28, west winds to 10. Tomorrow, the rain is expected to show up. That rain could be heavy at times tomorrow. High near 43 tomorrow, with east winds to 20, increasing to 30 tomorrow afternoon. And look for that rain to continue, well, throughout the rest of the week. Just a chance of rain for Saturday. Looking at our local tides, we have a low tide coming up. That will happen at 2:47 this afternoon here on the east side and be a 3-foot tide, followed by a high tide at 8:37 p.m. of 7 feet. Over on the west side, your low tide will happen at 3:40 this afternoon and be 4.5 feet, followed by a high tide at 9:14 of 11 feet in Larsen Bay. Mariners, here's your weather forecast for Marmot Island to Sitkanak out to 15 miles. Small craft advisory through Wednesday. West winds to 20 knots, becoming south 15 tonight. 14-foot seas should come down to 9 feet, but look for east winds to 25 knots after midnight tonight, and east winds to 30 knots tomorrow with seas to 12 feet, coming up to 15 feet tomorrow night. And they are calling for southeast winds to 30 knots on Thursday with 17-foot seas. Over in the Shellacost Strait, gale warning for tomorrow, west 15 today and seas to 3 feet. Variable 10 tonight, becoming east 25 after midnight. 2-foot seas are expected to build to 5 feet after midnight. And for tomorrow on our west side, east winds to 35 knots, seas to 9 feet. For Thursday, east 25, seas to 8 feet. Well, the Kiwanis Christmas tree sales are about to kick off. They begin Friday, this coming Friday, November 24th, and they end Sunday, assuming the trees hold out, December 10th. And they feature three varieties of trees, as well as wreaths, mantelpieces, and cedar garland by the foot. And the first Friday, the 24th, they're going to open at noon and be open all the way till 7 p.m. So on Friday, noon to 7, all other Fridays, they're going to open at 4 o'clock and be open till 7 p.m. On Saturdays, they'll be open from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and on Sundays, they'll be open from 12 p.m. to 4 p.m. So they're going to be open Friday, Saturdays, and Sundays, 4 to 7 on Fridays, 10 to 4 on Saturdays, 12 to 4 on Sundays, and this Friday, they will open at noon and be open all the way till 7 o'clock, and that's happening at the usual place at 111 Bartell Avenue. Things happening at the library include today's Kodiak Hearts activity. They will be making seasonal placemats for elders, and all ages are welcome to participate. That's happening at 3:30 this afternoon. Sounds like fun. On Wednesday is the famous Lego Club. That's happening at 3:30 in the afternoon as well. Kids under 10 must be accompanied by an adult. And remember, Wednesday, the library will close at 5 p.m., so tomorrow they'll close at 5. They will be closed Thursday for Thanksgiving and Friday for Thanksgiving, too. And everyone at the library wishes everyone a Thanksgiving, happy Thanksgiving holiday. And they'll reopen Saturday at 10 a.m. The second installment of the Kodiak Fish and Game Advisory Committee meetings will be happening tonight. That's happening at 5:30 p.m., in the Chiniac Room at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game office over on Near Island. Many hands make light work. Canna Elder Services and Canna Prevention are looking for youth ages 13 to 18 who'd like to assist them making this Thanksgiving season extra special for our elders. They are hosting an Elders Thanksgiving lunch, and they need your help. Volunteer time slots are 2 hours long on Wednesday, that's tomorrow, starting at 10 a.m., 12 p.m., and 2 p.m. For details and to sign up, call Canna Prevention at 907-486-7396. And yes, it's okay to sign up your kids. This afternoon, the latest edition of Scuttlebutt will be going on. It's a galley tables workshop for youth. That's happening from 4 p.m. to 5:30 p.m. at the Kodiak Public Library's Craft Room. For more information, call 907-486-7396.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.